Welcome. So today's podcast, we are talking with Kath from Property Before Prada. She is a powerhouse mortgage broker, but she also educates women on how to get financial savvy and how to get those loans up and off the ground. So in this podcast, we're going to be talking to Kath on her experiences and how she helps women. She's going to be giving you some insights into what you need to do to get mortgage ready or get finance ready, the paperwork you need. And she's giving us a little bit of her insights into what's happening today with COVID-19 and how you can get prepared even though that's still happening. So we hope you stay with us. It's going to be a really fun chat and we'd love you to join us.
Hi, I'm Rebecca.
And I'm Krabashni.
And welcome to Building with Builders,
our podcast where we believe that building is fun.
Super fun.
So much fun.
Build Her Collective was created to help women with building and renovating. And we believe that with the right tools, everyone can build. For us, it's all about encouraging women to take back control of the building process and really achieve their dreams.
We are women in the building industry. And as developers, builders, and project managers, it's our passion to share everything we know with other women doing the same. And that's why we've created this podcast for you.
So if you love all things building,
you're into design,
keen on the numbers,
about to renovate,
thinking and dreaming of that forever home and what it would look like,
or even developing for profit,
then you've found your family.
Subscribe to our podcast and follow our journey over at buildhercollective.com.au.
Hi everyone, and welcome to our podcast with Catherine Pizzola from Property Before Prada. Now, we were just practicing a little bit earlier on how to do her, how to say her name, and she did teach me, and I promptly forgot. Now, Catherine, you have such an interesting business and history. We were so delighted that you accepted our invitation to be on the podcast today, and I'm just so keen to get into it. So Property Before Prada is such a cool name for a business. I'm keen to know how you came up with it.
It speaks me. First of all, thank you for having me. I am a massive fan and I'm totally up to date with all your podcasts. Look, Property Before Prada, for me, when I went back to look at rebranding my business, because I've been in this industry for such a long time, 17 years now.
Wow.
And it's been a while and I've seen a lot of change within the market over this period. And when I decided to rebrand, because I was part of a franchise prior, I was like, well, I want the brand to actually be me, my beliefs and what I want to portray. And for me, setting yourself up financially before you buy all those beautiful handbags and designer goods, that is me. I've always done it my entire life. Mm-hmm. I've always done Property Before Prada, and I wanted my brand to speak my message. Mm-hmm. And for me, that was a rich message and it was what I resonated with. So I was hoping to reach other, you know, in particular women, to help and guide them on investing and setting themselves up financially before they go and buy those gorgeous designer items.
Yeah. Do you find that that is something that women who come to you who are looking to invest has been their focus? Or do you think it's just a bit of a lack of, I don't want to say this in a very blunt way, but, you know, a lack of education around financial planning for young girls and young women who are entering the workforce?
Absolutely, there's a lack of education. Mm. Look, there's a lot of things out there on the market, but does it actually speak to the young women? And it's not just necessarily young women. Mm-hmm. It's women of all ages that have either, they're new starting out, never bought property and frivolous spending, or it's women that maybe have been with a partner for a very long period of time that they've never handled the financials themselves. Yeah. So there's a big demographic there, and the financial information can be intimidating. It can be bank jargon. It can be really difficult to understand. And I remember when I first went to get my first home loan, I was speaking to the business banker at the time behind the in the branch, and what he spoke was double dutch to me. And I really wanted to simplify all of that really confusing information and break it down into easy bite-sized steps and deliver it. And that's what I've really tried to do, is make it easy and palatable to actually take in.
That's fantastic. And I think that's, you've identified a massive gap that's in the market, but also within ourselves. And I feel like along the way, as we've gotten really smart in some areas, we've also reduced our general understanding and our general knowledge of a lot of different areas.
Absolutely.
I remember the first time I went into the bank to try and get a loan, and it was quite overwhelming. Mm. And it's, you know, it's you and this person who's sitting opposite you, and you kind of feel like you're being tested, and that you need to have all the answers to all the questions, and that you need to be able to know what they're talking about. And to be able to get that information from you and then go into the bank with the confidence to understand what they're asking for in simple terms, but to know when you don't have the information as well, and to know what you don't know that you need the help in. I think that's where a lot of people also get lost.
Yeah.
And they're kind of asking you for stuff, and they're like, well, you're like, where do I even go for that?
Yes. And it's interesting the range of questions that we get asked. And that's why I conduct my masterclasses, because it drills down and it just starts with the foundations. And there's always a variety of knowledge with the guests that come and attend, but it's just drilling down to just the fundamentals and the basics, and you can build from there. And you don't know what you don't know.
And someone should, by golly, tell you. Now, you yourself, I was reading your bio a little bit earlier, and you said you started, you know, your property portfolio when you were, is it 19?
Yes.
That's amazing. Something I noticed when I moved to Australia particularly, but, you know, as a young girl growing up in New Zealand, I didn't get the feeling that investing in property was something that I should be thinking about. I guess my trajectory at that time was like, you know, I was going to uni, get a degree, go for my OE, come back, get a job, and so I was so excited when I read that you had started your investment portfolio at 19, but it also made me remember, I felt when I first moved over to Australia that actually that is something that's on young people's mind over here compared to New Zealand, or compared to just over the other side, you know. How did that come about for you, I guess? Was that something you were exposed to, or?
Look, I've been exposed to property since I was quite young. Like, mum and dad were always buying and selling. Certainly not to the level that I've done anything, but I remember growing up and dad would go away on his business trips, and mum would get out the tins of paint, and she'd be painting and decorating a new room. And that renovation was instilled into myself and my sister when we were very young. Yeah. And I saw how mum and dad added value to properties, and then they sold them and they made money. Again, they weren't massive investors and they didn't flip all the time, but I saw what they did and I loved it. Like, I'd love when dad would take off for a couple of days and he'd come back and we'd repainted the whole house. It was fantastic, but I loved it. And that's where I think I got my first real love and passion. I started saving money very young. I always wanted to work. Like, from the moment I turned 14 and 9 months, I was banging down doors to get jobs. That was just me. I had multiple jobs happening. And by the time I was 19, I'd saved a deposit. Now, you know, we had no first homeowner grant. We had nothing. It was like you save up your 20% deposit. And I had done it. And it was just for me. I always knew I wanted to invest in property. And I think it comes back to seeing how mum and dad did small things, but in my eyes, they were just doing so well at it. And that's what I wanted to do.
So tell us a little bit about that first property.
Oh, my God. It was a doozy. So... And this is the first mistake that I ever made. So 19, saw the property. It was in Davidson Street, South Yarra. A 70s, a really good, solid double, you know, typical ugly, ugly as sin. It was really gross. But
it, brown?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it had wallpaper in the double brick, you know, walls. It was horrid. So we went to the agent and I just said, you know, show us the car park. And he, you know, took us down and showed us the car park, and that's where you park your car. And anyway, we were happy. I purchased it for $157,000. Amazing.
Oh, goodness.
Two bedroom, one. And they were big apartments, you know, as you can imagine. Upon settlement, moved in. And what I later found out was there was no car park on title. Mm-hmm. That car park was a car park, but it wasn't my car park. So oh, wow. I had done no due diligence. I had not asked enough questions and I'd not spoken to my conveyancer to get them to do all the checks that they needed to do. So that was probably one of my biggest mistakes. I bought an apartment without a car park. Nonetheless, I did end up selling it off quite a few years later, renovated it, and I really made some good money out of it. Mm. So it wasn't all that bad, but I should have done a lot better research. But again, I made a good lot of money out of it.
So that first experience in buying something, was that when you first jumped, dipped your toes into the financial market as well as the property market?
Yeah, absolutely. I grew up in family business prior to that. Mum and Dad had an insurance business. So I was always surrounded by business and I did a bit of work for them. So I always had a good bit of knowledge of the finance industry, but I'd never, you know, that was my first mortgage.
How did that feel, having a mortgage? Being responsible for something like that?
I don't know. I just thought that's what you did, you know, yeah. And I was so motivated. I wanted my second property and within 2 years I'd got it. Wow. So I was not stopping. For my 21st birthday, I signed a contract for 105 Dank Street in Albert Park. It's a single fronted Victorian, like 20 metres off Big Ave. Like that was just me. I was just like, let's do this. I had a partner at the time and you know, we did that together. But for me, I just wanted to do big things. Mm.
That is the most unique 21st birthday present I think I've ever heard.
Yeah.
And anyone listening to this podcast, if you can trump that 21st birthday present to yourself, drop us an email, send us an email, let us know, because I think there's a competition that's going to happen out of this. So in Property for Prada, I know you also, you know, you work on finance deals and you broker deals as well, and you're helping us on certain projects as well, which is really exciting that we get to partner and collaborate with you. What I noticed about you is actually your enthusiasm that you bring to the project and that you bring to the finance part of it. And, you know, finance can be really daunting and scary for a lot of people, and it's that one thing that they think, oh, is it going to bring them down or not? And I just love the energy that you brought to the table and your ideas, how you can bring that deal together and how you can pair the solution with the problem. And you know, I'm sure that comes down to your experience, but also I think it's passion for what you do and what you love.
Absolutely. And I think being in this industry for the amount of time I have, you know, you've got to be passionate about what you do. For me, I am obsessed with property. I absolutely love it. I think if you do it well, you know, you can make really good money out of it. And it certainly helped me in the past 21 years get to where I am now. And when I see new projects come across my desk, I get excited. It's like, show me those plans. Like, give me a look at that. Like, I love it. You know, it's problem solving and it's helping someone bring it from an idea into reality. And yeah. Especially in developing, it's not easy to find the right finance solution, and it's about seeking and sourcing them out and finding the right funder. And sometimes they can be, you know, quite difficult to put together, so especially if you've got like a sophisticated structure. It's a big finance environment. There's a lot of options out there, and it's, you know, I do like the challenge of bringing a project together. It's fun. And it's fun to see it get off the ground and go, you know what, I helped do that. It's, you know, it's enjoyable for me.
Oh, you're absolutely right. We were just reflecting actually the other day, we were talking with our masterclass about how you need to pull your team together and how you need the right people on your team. And each player has a really important role, but they need to be able to be creative about what they're doing. And when we talk about creativity, we're not really talking about the design creativity. Everyone in their own sphere of their industry has an element of creativity, how they solve the problem. And I think that's really fabulous. And I thought you could talk to us a little bit too, maybe around how you kind of navigate that world of being that in between, you know, because really what you're doing is you're negotiating. You're negotiating with the bigger banks and you're negotiating with the client and you're working out that ideal solution. So do you want to tell us a little bit about how you kind of pull those things together? Because I think you've got a great talent.
It's interesting. So every development is quite different in terms of what the funding structure will be and what you're building. And I find that the bigger you build, the more that you're in the development funding kind of space. And what I've done over the years and what a lot of my clients that are building smaller projects, we get to a stage where we start off you're able to get home loan funding, you know, mm-hmm. to get your projects off the ground and get them built. And then the bigger the projects, the more sophisticated the structure, then you start working through and then you kind of get into that bit of a grey area where it's kind of not big enough to be development funding. It's bigger than a home loan. And what are we going to do? And how are we going to fund this? It can be quite tricky to get the right solution. But I think you've got to have the mindset that this is also a business. And if you're renovating and developing for profit, you've got to expect that you can't always have things like a nice little packaged home loan. Things need to develop. Costs are going to go up for cost of funding because this is a business. You know, and I think sometimes that when I'm dealing with clients, they've got this idea that no, they want a home loan. But when you're renovating for profit or you're developing, it's actually gone beyond that now. And mm-hmm. this is a business and your mindset is completely different. You're yep. going to get a different kind of funding solution. So you might start off with home loan lending like probably 95% of us have, and then you go through to development funding, which is short-term, two-year funding. And it's designed per project. It's not necessarily based on your serviceability. You know, it's based on the feasibility, you know, number one. So we're looking for different things. So there's so many different ways to package it, put it together. But it is also about working with the right business partners that can come in and go, yeah, I got it. I know what you need and understand and want to work with you. And it might be that you're not going to stay with the same bank that you're with. You need to go and explore other options and other funders that this is what they do. And that's what I like to bring to the table. It's like, well, do you want a 3% home loan where you're restricted to X, Y, and Z, or do you want to move on and really start this to be your business? Get it off the ground. And okay, you're going to pay a higher interest rate for development funding, but you know what? They're going to fund your project. It's going to get off the ground. You're going to make money. So there's a bit of a mindset thing. And for me, I have to educate women and people in general on, okay, we've got to go in this path now. Forget the home loan lending. Let's move forward. This is a business and this is how we're going to structure it.
You're so right. And I think it comes back to like some backbones. I think your backbone and your feasibility, the backbone and understanding the project and the outcomes. And then having that, I think you said it so perfectly. I've been open-minded enough to be understanding the different avenues and the different paths you can take, because sometimes I think we do get into a bit of a tunnel vision and we want it to be like very easy. We know it's going to be hard, but we want it to be as easy as it can be. And then we're not willing to really step outside the box because that's a bit scary. Yeah. And so, you know, having someone that can teach us the steps, but also I think take the time to explain it, because I think you nailed it on the head there. When you're teaching people as they're going on their journey and they're doing things, they're moving along and they're scaling up, they're getting more sophisticated in their understanding. And I think what often happens is when we sometimes go to professionals, they're not necessarily teaching us. And I think that's the difference about what you're doing too, is that you're teaching and nurturing along the way. Then what happens is they don't really understand how much has happened in the background to maybe get a solution off the ground. And so then they go into the next project thinking certain things, having certain assumptions, making sometimes maybe the wrong assumption because they're not really understanding enough about what happened in that last scenario, that this one's different, or not knowing when to ask the right questions.
Yeah. Every development's different too. Like, and you've kind of go, well, what worked for one development may not work for another.
And the outcome of one development may not be the same outcome of another. Like you said to your earlier point, you needed to do your due diligence. So you're understanding the process that you're taking and you're understanding the key questions you're asking along the way. I also want to talk to a little bit around, we help women and you help women too, right?
Absolutely.
We also help men and we help families, and we believe we're helping everyone by helping the woman in the family. And it brings me to really thinking about young people and young women. And the idea that you have, like, of not so much spending when they could be saving and investing and growing their own wealth for themselves. But how do you find, you know, when you're working with women on the other spectrum, on the other side? We have a lot of women in our community who are investing for profit, who are building their own homes, who are thinking about what to do. And they've come out the other side, have been in a long-term relationship. They haven't had much work experience. They have been working along the way, and they've come out with a bit of money and they want to do something with it and they want to grow it. Do you find that you work with women in that sort of area as well?
That's such a large demographic of women there that a lot of them are actually rebuilding after they might have come out of a relationship also, and they're just rebuilding their life. And it's actually really nice to kind of, you know, bring them together. You want to give them a big bear hug because they've been through a lot, you know, and they're trying to, you know, get back on their feet financially after not being in the market. And it's kind of foreign. A lot of this is foreign to them. Mm. And in addition to that, there's been a lot of movement within what the bank's processes and policies. Mm. There's a lot of things that they're just not used to. So those women in particular, I love to hold their hand and guide them and go, you know what, you've got this. You know, let's put together a plan. Let's give you the toolkit so that you can slowly rebuild and work towards your plans. So definitely there's a large amount of women that are in that particular situation that we do help.
Yeah, absolutely. I have to say, if that's you and if you're in that camp or if you're in the younger camp, do start thinking about these things because sometimes they're slow burners and sometimes you pull the right things together and there's a whole lot of momentum there where you can get started on something. Which kind of brings us to our current state of play. So at the moment, you know, we're dealing with a bit of social isolation and, you know, we're having a bit of the COVID-19 is here. And we wanted to just sort of touch base with you and see, you know, what your ideas are, your thoughts are. I know there's some people out there who might have been gearing up for an investment or thinking about it, and they might be feeling a bit disheartened. Or on the flip side, they might be feeling like there's some great opportunities that are going to come up on the market down the track once we get over this initial hump. What are your thoughts around the bank's reaction to COVID and maybe still trying to progress your own projects?
It's interesting because the banks are still 150%. They're open for business. What I believe will happen is that they may change their policies on certain types of income. So there's a lot of banks out there that will lend on casual income, will find that they'll tighten their policies on casual income, and that's because of what's just happened with job losses. In terms of, though, lending, absolutely, there's big opportunities out there. And I feel that right now the best thing that you could do due to the restrictions on open for inspections, you need to be a qualified buyer to start doing those inspections and you must get your pre-approval in place. And that's the biggest thing that I'm really speaking to my clients about at the moment is don't just throw your hands up in the air and go, well, let's just see what the market's doing and I'll sort it out later and I'm going to sit back. It's like, you know what, there might be some good opportunities out there and you're going to lose them because you're not a qualified buyer. And by being a qualified buyer, you must have a pre-approval in place. So that's the biggest thing that I'm saying to clients at the moment is don't stop. You know, when big changes and adversity hits like this, there is opportunity in every single market. Now, if you're not prepared, you will certainly miss out on that.
You're so right. We were just talking to someone the other day who's ready, was just at the beginning of this, was ready to go to tender on a project. Mm. And, you know, she was, rightly so, she was thinking about whether she should hold off and see what happens with COVID or, you know, sort of proceed. And with asking a few qualifying questions and sort of understanding where she was with her financing and where she was with her documentation and, you know, what was the look and feel of the building and what size job it was, we're looking at all of those facts and we're saying, actually, now's a great time for you to tender because there's going to be a lot of tradies and a lot of builders out there who are wanting to secure works. Mm-hmm. And they're going to be sharpening their pencil because they're wanting to make sure they're the ones who win the jobs.
Absolutely.
Because she had no real restrictions with her funding of her project in that case, there was nothing really stopping her or holding her back. Mm. So we were sort of saying, well, if it was us and understanding the facts that we have at this present time, and, you know, if we were doing this and this is how we would proceed and these were the risks and these are the things that you should think about to make sure you've got your best foot forward but you're still moving forward.
And I think the worst thing that you can do in anything like this is just stop. And just wait. It's like, no, activity. You need activity. And if ever. You just need to keep going with your plans. And obviously you're making calculated decisions and you're assessing risk as you go along. But now's not the time to just go, well, look, I'll just wait, because you're going to miss things along the way. And I feel like for me personally in my business, I'm full steam ahead. Like, I'm marketing my business like nothing before. I'm cracking the whip on my builders who are doing my development at the moment, going, come on, guys, let's get cracking. Like, let's just not stop. Because half of the country's stopping, half of the world is stopping. Let's not join in with them. Let's keep going and forge this out together so that we come out of it ahead. Absolutely. And we come out stronger than ever.
I guess before we leave the podcast today, I'd love if you could share, and I'm thinking about it right now, you know, what are some tips that you might be able to share with us? And if you're listening to this podcast and you're thinking, well, that might be me and I want to get my best foot forward and I want to get ready. What are some tips that you can offer us or you could share with us on anyone who's thinking about, you know, renovating or expanding themselves in the property market to get them ready or to grow that wealth, to be in a good spot?
I think right now, given that we're all in lockdown and quarantine, now is the best time to get your finances sorted in terms of, and what I mean by that, there's a range of things that you can do. If you're self-employed, you need to get your tax done. Get that sorted. You've got time up your sleeve. Just get it done. These niggly little jobs, get them done. Look at your financial situation. Look at your home loan. Is it on the best rate? Look at your cash savings, your money in redraw. Can you borrow more? Look at equity. Can you get equity out of your house to prepare to get a deposit for another property? I feel that a lot of people, like, getting prepared to home loan is probably one of the most important things. And whilst you've got some time up your sleeve and you're at home, now is a great time to get together all your documents. Like, when we put together loan applications for the bank, there's a very big list. Why don't now use this time and get yourself prepared? And look, you might not end up applying for a bank loan for another couple of months, but get yourself prepared now. Get your tax lodged. Like, these are the things that the banks look at. If you haven't done 2019 financials, they have to get done. So that's number one. If you're working with an accountant, try not to accumulate too many losses for personal income, because the banks take those losses out of your income, which reduces your borrowing capacity. Speak to a broker such as myself who might be able to say, look, this is your maximum borrowing capacity, and start planning. My biggest thing is always plan and set yourself some goals. And I might be the first person that you might reach out to and say, Kath, can you do my borrowing capacity? Tell me how much I can borrow and I'll work back from there. And I think that strategically putting together your plan of attack, sorting out your finances is the best step, so that you can, whether you're working on getting an approval now or in 6 months' time, you're going to be ready.
I think they're fantastic. So if you're listening and that's you, get on to it.
Yes. Now.
No, use your time effectively. Like, you know, when you're not popping out to the shops and you're not kind of traveling and meeting up with friends, I know it's horrible, but you know, maybe you can use your time and get the best out of it. And really, I was kind of laughing to my husband, but I was sort of saying, well, we could go on, you know, a bit of a COVID cleanse. You know, maybe we could, for the next, you know, however long we're going to be on self-isolation, like, be healthy, try and get out for our walks, eat better. You know, you could have a COVID financial health check as well.
Absolutely. There's nothing better than that.
All right. Well, thank you so much for being with us here today, Catherine.
Thanks for having me.
I'm super excited to talk to you a little bit more in the Developers in a Circle, which is another program that we're going to be talking to Kath in a little bit more detail about her projects and her journey and how she funded all those, is it 21 projects along the way?
That's 21 projects.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Building with Buildher. We'd love for you to spread the word.
For show notes, links and downloads and other awesome resources and freebies, head to buildhercollective.com.au. And don't forget, that's Buildher with an H-E-R.
And if you enjoyed this episode, it would mean so much to both of us if you could take a minute or two to leave a review.
And don't forget to subscribe so you can listen next time as we talk all things building and women making their mark in the building industry.